Yeah, well, welcome to a special edition of the Hot Spurs podcast. We've got an extra special guest on today. He is a legend of football, played for England in the 1990 World Cup. Absolutely brilliant central defender, and he's got one of the best songs about any footballer ever about him, which is "You'll Never Beat Des Walker." How you doing, Des?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, very well, thank you. Now, I just let everybody know how I got in touch with you. Basically, a couple of weeks ago, my dad went and played golf in Spain, as he does every year. And they have like a footballers tournament there where they have about 30 or 40 footballers. And every year when he comes back, I always say to my dad, oh, you know, who's the best? Who's got some good stories and what have you? And he, over the years, it's been, you know, this player, that Alan Hansen or Kenny Dalglish or somewhere or the other, brilliant. And then a couple of years ago, he said to me, well, the one who told the best stories was Des Walker. And of course I said to him, what, Des Walker is quite quiet, isn't he? He said, no. Absolutely fantastic, some of the stories he had. So I said, oh, listen, next time you see him, please ask to be on the show, and here you are. So, listen, thanks ever so much for coming on.
No, it's a pleasure. No, obviously I've seen his dad there year to year, and he's, I've played golf him a few times, and he's always looked after me. So after the games, you sit down and a few beers, and the stories start to flow then, I think, you know. So people get interested. I think the one Brian Clough, obviously, he was the manager for 11 years, so there's always a story when Brian Clough's around, and obviously, with so you playing for your country, you're playing in the World Cup, and people like to know, and they like to know sort of how what you felt like playing for your country.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's excellent. I know, and I know that my dad's now got a reputation of asking constant questions as well, so I didn't know that until this summer. Somebody told me that. But anyway, you know, what I want to ask you, first of all, obviously the song "You'll Never Beat Des Walker," it's kind of, you know, whenever somebody sees you on telly, I know you was on the other day, Soccer Aid one, and of course as soon as you touch the ball, the commentator said, "And you'll never beat Des Walker." Is that something that people like builders shout at you as you're walking down the street?
Yeah, especially back in the 90s and early 2000s, I used to hear it. And living in Nottingham, all the like the Forest fans, it used to shout in the street. So people always ask me, oh, what does it feel like to hear like 20,000 people singing? I mean, more than anything, where it helped me in football was I actually think it annoyed the striker I was playing against.
Yeah.
Because every time, if he ran in the channel, I got there first, all the Forest fans were singing. So in his mind, he'd think, be a little bit embarrassed thinking, well, I better not go because I'm not going to win.
Yeah.
So sometimes I think it put them on a negative because the fans were embarrassed by singing it. As soon as I got there before them, they'd all sing it. So I like to hear it because I knew this striker. I remember Gary Lineker actually saying to me one day, and he says, you know what I mean? He said, tell me about that thing. I ain't just playing against them. He said, bloody, I never beat these look every time he gets there first. So you could know that it was in people's minds. So it was always, and anything to make your job easier in football is welcome.
Yeah, no, it's a brilliant song, and I just wonder, you know, I thought sort of, yeah, you got Nicholas Lyndhurst who walks down the road, and everyone must shout Rodney and all this, or the, you know, you plonkering all the time. And I thought with you, like that song, must whenever you look at you, you just think, oh, you'll never beat Des Walker. Did you know? Obviously, you know, there was one guy, and a very, very famous clash in the World Cup was against Jürgen Klinsmann, and I remember it specifically at the start of that game, the commentator sort of saying, you know, the duel between you two is going to be fantastic. You know, what were your thoughts on you know, going straight into that game, you know, against Jürgen Klinsmann, obviously a Spurs legend. What were your thoughts going into that game?
Well, obviously at the time, you know, one of the best players in the world, and it was him and it was Rudi Müller up front. So they're a formidable partnership. But the main sort of, it wasn't a sort of highlight, it was playing against Jürgen. It was a semi-final of the World Cup, and you know, your mind is really to do your job. So I was that focused on, it doesn't matter who you put in front of me, really, just doing the job, you know, because you're that close, you don't want to be making mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, it's semi-final. So, as much as the pressure builds when you're in the World Cup, so sometimes you don't really get a chance to sit
sit back and admire anything or admire anyone. Just don't get that uptight in doing your job. You become focused. So it's afterwards you tend to think, oh, I played against him, and oh, he was a good player. Or he was. It's afterwards you tend to, if anything, enjoy the World Cup, thinking on your way home and the following week or 2 weeks. That's where everything starts to sink in. So, and even losing a semi-final, you know, sometimes it would be selfish. It's all 2 or 3 weeks later when you kind of sinks in how close you was. It's like, you know, a bit of luck there, and then you played and should have got a little bit more out of the game. And things like that. At the time, you're so intense and just trying to win the game of football. So,
yeah.
Enjoyment's the last thing you get out of the game.
Well, as fans, obviously, it's exactly the same. You know, I don't think we enjoy any of these World Cup games. You know, particularly when you're watching Tottenham against Arsenal, or you know, one of these big games, you don't enjoy it until afterwards. But did you get Jürgen's shirt at the end? Is that what happened?
I think I've got Jürgen's. I think we've got Jürgen's already was one of the two.
Yeah.
But I've definitely got Jürgen's shirt when I played against him Germany before or that semi-final.
Yeah.
I've definitely got his shirt.
I think
I've got his shirt. I've got Klinsmann's. I think I've got Fuller's because I Jürgen's already.
Oh right. He sort of said, "Oh no, I've got yours already, mate. It's all right." But if memory serves me, you played brilliantly against him, and and unfortunately, obviously, you know, we lost it in the end. One of the most brilliant matches, obviously, you know, from a Spurs point of view, you got Chris Waddle hitting the bar for the halfway line and the post right at the very end. And of course, you know, I can't let you have you on without asking you about Gazza. What was he like in that World Cup, and have you got any little stories you could tell us?
Most things together went great. But yeah, he was magnificent in the World Cup. For me, that period of 2 to 3 years, he's possibly the best player in the world. I can argue a little bit here and there, but he's up there certainly as the best player in the world, or if not one of the two or three best players in the world for 2-3 years. So, you know, he was a privilege to play with Gazza. You know, the things he'd done in football and in training that defies logic. You know, he had that much ability and strength and fitness. He had everything that came out to offer. You know, he was a midfield player, he was all round. He had a look at the national region.
What was he like in the dressing room before the match?
He wound up. He was highly strong. He was that kind of character. He could never sit still. One thing you don't want to do is room together, because he ain't going to sleep. You know what I mean? He'll go eat one and he'll go fishing in the middle of the night. He'll get up and he'll say, I'll go fishing. You've got a game tomorrow. He said, no, I'm going fishing. And he get up and he'd gone fishing. I fished all night. We played at Wembley.
Yeah.
And we played a qualifying game. So we was in the hotel in Slough at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. 5 o'clock in the evening, you come down for pre-match. So I've come down. There's one coming down. Gavin's walking towards me. And I'm looking at him. And he sweats dripping off him. And I'm thinking, he's not going to be free. How's he going to be free? He goes, what are you doing? He said, I ain't mate. I went playing squash. I said, you're playing squash. Some American thinks he's good at squash, so I'll give him a lesson. He didn't play squash until all afternoon. So we're playing Wembley that night, qualifying game.
Yeah.
And, you know, it goes, gets changed. We go, obviously, I'm playing the game. He's best player in the park.
And yeah.
That's Gazza. The only way you destroy Gazza is to lock him in his room and keep him still. He will get depressed and he will go mad. He'll burn the house in the hotel down, in all fairness. But just leave him to do what he's doing, and then come and he gets rid of aggression, gets rid of what he and he's brilliant in the match. And I think sometimes a lot of football put a lot of restrictions on you, and Gazza struggled to cope later on. He got so big he had to go along with the restrictions, but it was detrimental to him because he's a free spirit, and that's the way he is. He's just a free spirit.
Yeah, and everybody that I speak to who's met him, I've met him very briefly once, and he was absolutely lovely. You know, like when you meet your heroes, you want them to, you know, just say hello, really. And he did, and he was great, and he signed a shirt, and he was brilliant. But everybody in football talks about him just as such, you know, they love him. They say such a nice bloke. And for all the crazy things he does, he's so nice. Can you remember him after the Germany game in the dressing room? I mean, you know, don't go into too much detail if you can't. But did you speak to him after that game, or?
I didn't really, and I can remember him. He's obviously all the boys are upset. But my real biggest memory was obviously Stuart Pearce, Mr. Perry, and Pearce is my real close friend.
Yeah,
Pearce is my roommate. And because I know Pearce, how he's a person, I knew of anyone in the team, he's going to take that yardage and the longest, hold it the longest of missing the penalty. So, I kind of, you know, when you feel for your mate, you really, you know, worry about yourself then, you know what I mean? I didn't even think, oh, we haven't won. I just remember when he missed that penalty thinking, yeah, the last person in the world, I went, you can miss that penalty, because he'll take it so hard on himself. But, you know, some people can miss a penalty because we all, you know what I mean, they're brave enough to take it, and they'll get on with it. Yes, they're disappointed. Next game, the pitch, I know. As the world seen, it took him something like 6 years.
Yeah.
Next night, that ghost, when he took that next penalty. And he would have that in him because it's the way he is as a person. So, after the game, as much as I can remember, guys, and I know he was disappointed, all of those disappointed, more Pearce stuck in my mind more than anything because he was my mate.
Yeah.
I mean, Forrest mate and my mate, the lifelong friends, really.
Yeah, so, I mean, sorry to bring back all those memories again for you, but, you know, it's amazing hearing about it. And obviously with the World Cup just gone, you know, unfortunately we haven't had too many of those memories in recent years. So we sort of hark back to the 96 and the 90, you know, tournaments, you know, for all those, you know, memories that, you know, were so emotional for us. Just to move on a couple of times. Obviously, you know, like people, when I said that Des Walker's on the show, they were sort of saying, "Oh, you know, from Nottingham and all this." But obviously, from your accent, you're a London boy.
I'm from Enfield, funny enough.
Yeah.
I was born in Agnew and I grew up in Enfield, North London.
And there's a Spurs connection,
and,
right?
I was at Tottenham from the age of 10 to 15.
Wow.
And then they got rid of me. When I was 15, and I ended up at Forest. So
who was at Spurs when you were there? What were there any youngsters who went on to be at Spurs?
When I was there, there was my age. The actual player was Richard Cook. Remember, Cookie made his debut at Forest when he was 17.
Yeah.
John Moncur, he was a year younger than me.
Yeah.
Vinny Sanway was a couple of years younger. They were there. And Ian Crook. Anderson Bollock, Ian Culverhouse, they're all a year older.
And they decided to get rid of you. What decision that was?
Well, that's how life is. You make your choices, and some obviously I thought they were wrong. So it was my job to prove them wrong. Yeah, and they think what they think, you know. But Robbie Stepney was the reserve team manager there.
Yeah.
And Robbie always fancied me as a player, and the others didn't. So he kind of told me, and he said, if I was you, I'd leave them, because they don't really fancy you, so you'll be wasting your time. So I did. And he helped me, you know, trial here and here and everywhere. But he thought I was a good player. And the rest of this was 6 months later, I was playing back at White Lane in the first team.
Yeah. I've got a couple of questions here from people on the internet. A guy called Allspurs says, it just says, just get a Cluffy story. So if you've got one that you could tell us.
People always ask me, a lot of the time, they'll go, Cluffy story. And there's probably a story that typifies Cluffy in the way that I thought he simplified the game. That was his strength. And he had that way of he could intimidate anybody. I was playing Wimbledon, and if everyone knows Wimbledon back in the 80s and 90s,
yeah,
they probably were the first team that started with with the, like a big music system, and it intimidated me and blasted it out. Because before Wimbledon come along, a dressing room was always quiet. You know, you just concentrated, got his mind right for the job, and went on and went out on the pitch.
Yeah.
Walking Wimbledon, it weren't the best bass player lane in the world, to be fair, but there'd be music blasting, and you'd hear their stereo system blasting in your room. So anyhow, back in the day, at half time, before the game, a manager and the captain went in to see the referee I think half past two, and the referee told you whatever. So Brian Clough was the manager, obviously, and if everyone remembers Clough, he always had a green top, white shorts, green socks, and a pair of trainers. That's how he was every game.
Yeah. Right?
So anyhow, it says to me, Piercy was injured, I think, this year, so I was captain.
Yeah.
So me and Brian Clough have gone in. So come in and go to the referee. So as he walks into the referee, John Fashanu is the captain.
Yeah.
Now John Fashanu, first thing you look at John and he's 6'2", 6'3". And he used to wear a towel and some flip flops. That's it. Right? And he'd walk in, because he's another one to try and intimidate you, because he was known to chuck an elbow on you in the air and everywhere and try and as probably Gary
Mabbott.
Right? But, so he was standing in this room, a big imposing figure he was, you know, 6'3", and solid muscle, big bloke.
Yeah.
And he would have no top on, just a towel and his flip-flops. A couple walked in and looked at him, shook his hand.
Yeah.
Shook the referee's hand. I shook his hand. And then Cluffy pauses and he says, "Now, referee, that young man has got a tendency of putting his elbow in Desmond's face." And I know Desmond's not the best looking lad in the world, but keep an eye out for it. And he walks out.
Yeah.
But next year, that's it, he walks out. Next year, we come along and I'm catching again. So he says, "Desmond, how are we going?" But this time I thought to myself, what's going on? He had a suit on, Cluffy. He put a big suit on. Dice, washed his ear at me. Looked dead smart, and he had a pair of brogues on, and I thought he must be doing an interview after the game, because he never wears that. He always wears green and white and trainers, yeah?
Yeah.
He never wears that, and I thought, well, what's that? Anyhow, he said, "Desmond, come in, we'll go to the referee." So we're walking in now, walking the referee. So he shakes the referee then, and then there's John Fashion, who stood in his flip-flops, his towel.
Yeah.
And he's been imposing, big head, he's sat in the other, looking at Clarkley. So Clarkley goes up to him, and he goes shake his hand. And as he shakes his hand, he jumps and stamps on his toe. John Fashion jumps up, starts screaming, "Ah!" He said, he turned around to me and he said, "See Desmond." Clarkley turned around to me and said, "See Desmond, he's not that hard, is he?" And walked out. Got back in the changing room, got unchanged, put his green and white back on,
yeah,
and went out for the game. I was laughing my head off, because Fashanu knew, he jumped up, he screamed like a baby. He didn't say one word to me during the game. He normally speaks during the game. He didn't elbow, he did nothing. He was like quiet as a mouse, because he knew I watched him jump up and down like a baby. And Cluffy put his brogues on, especially a stamp on his toe. I know you think to yourself, that's intimidating someone. You know, he waited from the next year to think, you think you can walk in this room like that, and as you think you are, I'll show you.
Oh my God, it's unbelievable. I mean, I bet there's, you know, things that happened every day on the training ground, you know, I know that a lot of the younger fans won't really remember Brian Clough, but, you know, obviously go on YouTube and have a look at all the clips, because I think every time he came on telly, he was just absolutely fantastic. You know, and you never knew what he was going to come out with, but what he did come out with was always something absolutely, you know, sort of mind-blowing, brilliant. Must have been so great to play under him. And of course, you play with it under him and Bobby Robson, you know, absolutely brilliant. And then, you know, some of the guys at Sheffield Wednesday as well, fantastic stuff. I've got a question from David Coates, who asks, who is the best player that you played against and why?
I played against so many good players. That's a privilege of playing football, I think. But if I pick one and put him out there, I would have to possibly say Marco van Basten.
Oh, yeah. Was that 88 in the Euros?
No, that was Tony Adams' skin.
Yeah.
But he was a world class, he was a brilliant player.
In the World Cup? Yeah, of course, it was the second game, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I played against him when I was in Italy. But I played against him for Holland a couple of times. Yeah. And I also played against him for AC Milan a couple of times.
Yeah.
And number one, I was lucky that he brought the best out of me, so I didn't fear him, I just admired him, and then realised, first time I played against him in the World Cup, I think it was, I got the better of him that day. But you know when you come up a park and you think, you don't want to play against him 10 times because you could get roasted, you know, and because even though I got the better of him, I raised my game, and good players make you raise your game, and then if you can raise to the path where you normally are, then obviously you've had a great game. But he's all round ability and control and his awareness of where everyone else in the team, and he was quick as well. He was a bit like a Kenny Dalglish.
Yeah.
But he's turning and this, that, and the other, he's bringing people in the game. But he's also quick as well. So, you know, and he was a great player.
Fantastic. And I think he retired at about 28 or 29 because he was injured.
Yeah, he got an ankle injury. And he retired early, 28, 29. Yeah, it's a shame, really, because he was one of the world's greats.
Yeah. Brilliant player. Paul Bestel asks, did you enjoy your time at Sampdoria? And do you feel that, and he's also asking about Sheffield Wednesday, whether you could have achieved a bit more. So, first of all, what are your thoughts on going to Sampdoria?
Well, I enjoyed my time at Sampdoria in the fact that it's a lovely place, a great club, and I played with some good players. But after about five or six games, I ended up playing left back, you know, and that was disappointing, really, because I'm not a left back, and the enjoyment of life at the time comes through how well I'm playing or where I'm playing. So
yeah,
that was why I look back at it was a bit of disappointment because I didn't really play centre half, and that's why I went to Italy, because I went to play against the best centre forwards in the world.
Yeah,
that's the reason
why
I went. So it's a bit of disappointment. As much as the experience of playing abroad when you're 26, 27 years of age is a fantastic experience. Chance I had in life, so I take some good and some bad out of it. But as I say, football's my life, so there's always that lingering doubt and that little bit of bitterness, because I thought, well, at a playing position, I'd have been happy and I'd have had a better time there.
And I mean, how long were you in Sampdoria for? Was it a year or two?
Just over a year. Because after a year, I thought, well, it was a bit. I wanted to stay in Italy, but in the Italians, there's always a little bit of politics, and they wouldn't let me stay in Italy. Because if you go somewhere else, you do well, they get embarrassed. So my only chance was that I had to leave Italy, this, that, and the other, because I wanted to go, because I played in the left back, and I thought, well, I'm not staying here. I'm not playing left back.
Yeah. And do you ever go back to Sampdoria?
I'll go back to Genoa every now and again, and I've got a few good friends there, and it's a beautiful part of the world.
Yeah.
Generally, so I'll go back every now and again, and sometimes I'll go and take the local derby in the Genoa versus Sampdoria, which is a great game normally.
And the fans sort of sell out to you, and
yeah, the fans are magnificent. They're brilliant. They were good to me when I was there. So yeah. the fans are magnificent.
I know. I think when Gazza goes back to Lazio, I think he only played about 10 games for him, but he's still regarded as an absolute god there. Obviously when he comes to Tottenham, we love him as well. And of course, you go back to Forest. I know a mate of mine, Matt O'Donnell. I saw him at the weekend. Massive Tricky Trees fan, and he said that you did a question and answer there a couple of weeks ago in a bar up there. Obviously, you know, that Forest and Sheffield Wednesday back here are the two clubs that you played for, substantially. Why do you think Wednesday didn't do as well as maybe they could have done? Because obviously you won loads at Forest.
Yeah, I'm not sure, Phil. When I came back, we had such a good team. They'd finished third in the league and they'd lost a couple of times to Arsenal in the cup final. And they had such a good team, and they bought me. And sometimes I think they'd have better off not buying me. You know, because they bought me, and then I think it was a massive outlay for them. And then they sold the players that needed together, because obviously that they weren't the stars, but they part of what made the team good, to sort of recoup some money.
Yeah.
And I think, well, you bought one and sold four. You know, it was either on the icing on the cake, so you spent the money, but you sold it into players and the Harkses and people like that. And they bought Andy Finn at the same time, so they bought two of us, two big signings,
yeah,
and then spent the next 2 years sort of lowering the wage bill. And I'm thinking, Well, that's not really easy. It kept tough. You know, and I played with it and had a good time. I enjoyed the first 5 years of Sheffield Wednesday. I had a great time, but I just thought to myself that with the team we had, if they'd have kicked on a little bit, if they'd have kept it together a little longer, it would and built around it, it would have gone on and challenged, you know, in the top five or six.
Yeah.
So it was a bit of a disappointment in that respect. And then we got, then we were one of the first teams, I think, that went like a 400. And I thought we got it wrong. You know, we paid out a lot of money, a hell of a lot of money, to foreign players, but we didn't get the best for the money. They're paying out. They needed players with more desire, more will to play for Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah.
You know, sure, if you mention United, you can buy them and then leave them out. You know, but once you bought them for that amount of money at Sheffield Wednesday, you had to keep playing them. Well, if you keep playing someone that don't really want to be there, then you're in trouble.
No, I mean, as Spurs fans, we know all about that with, you know, several of our players at the moment and through the history, obviously. Were you, so in infield, were you a Spurs fan as a kid?
I was, yeah. I grew up down the road, I was an Arsenal fan.
Yeah.
Three sins. So yeah, he's always been, I've always been a Tottenham fan, you know, so.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a wrench in leaving when I was a kid, but
yeah.
It did mean the world, it was the best thing out to me because I met a genius, that was Brian Clough, and yeah. He simplified football. And it wasn't that whether I should have been released by Tottenham or shouldn't, that's arguable anyhow, but that it's a matter of game, it's a matter of opinion.
Yeah.
But the way you simplify football, and it's very, very simple then to grasp and what he wants out of football, what he wants out of in a team ethic, and it was so simple that once you view it as simple, then you don't want to repeat it time and time again.
Yeah. You know, it's a shame that obviously you didn't get to come back to Tottenham in the end. You know, when I put the question out, you know, I told people that you're coming on the show, right? And I'm doing this very tentatively, and I'm asking you right at the end of this because I don't want you to hang up. But most people want to know about the goal, obviously, in the cup final. Now, listen, you know, you don't have to talk about it if you don't want to. But you know, what were your thoughts, sort of? When that goal went in, because I could hear
that smile in your voice.
I'm just looking through my phone, I'm looking at all these tweets and they're going, ask him about the 91, and I'm like, I can't ask him that, God, what's going on, but, you know, I'm sure that...
Good or bad in your career, you know, the bad parts of it,
yeah.
The disappointing parts is what else makes the good parts, you know, remember people's career runs smooth all the time, but... My memory of that really was for one, you don't lose to the last minute. So I enjoyed the cup final, really did, until they got winning, until we lost. You know,
yeah.
But it's a lovely day until that, and it made a lot of Tottenham fans happy. But I remember the ball getting crossed. And Gary Mabbott, to be fair, had scored an own goal the year before or the time before.
That's right. And of course, he's a Coventry legend.
He was coming in. Another legend. Yeah, he was coming in. And I thought myself, I've got to get it for him because he's going to head it in. So I've gambled and it's hit me flush on the face. And I always remember my last memory watching it. And I'm thinking, this is going to lose goal. And there was a guy on our line. And it's going above his head. And you know, I mean, my last memory, there was 25,000 Forest fans behind the goal. And you know, when it goes in and you just see 25,000 people just go quiet, you know,
yeah.
I can visit it to this day, you know, it's not for me, you know, I played football for me and myself, but the fans are great to me, and I think on the day, the last person they thought would let them down was me, on the day, and so that always kind of is a little bit, but I have a good consolation, because I think I've put my head there that many times and gambled, and it's not gone in, and stopped so many goals, so... for me, it's not whether the result, it's whether I did the right thing. I can let it go and think, Gary, you score it. But you ain't going to win too many games doing that.
I mean,
that's how I view the game. But for me, the changing thing, the unfortunate thing, to be fair, there'll be a lot of fans here who say, you know, but Gazza going off cost us the cup final.
Yeah.
Because Paul Stewart ran the game when Gazza went off.
Yeah, he was brilliant.
It changed Paul Stewart. That game single-handedly changed Paul Stewart's career.
Yeah.
From then on, he did work at Tottenham and then he went to Liverpool. Because his career was at Tottenham had come to a little bit of a standstill.
Yeah.
He'd come as a centre forward. He didn't really do it as a centre forward.
That's right.
And he ended up dropping back in midfield. And that game there, when Gazza went off, he absolutely fast enough. He dominated the game.
Yeah.
And so Gazza got you going off. Single-handedly, I think, destroyed us. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Stewart reacted. So sometimes I use that as consolation to say, well, it wasn't really my fault, even though I stuck it in.
Well, I think also about that game, you know, you say about Gazza going off, so much we're relying on Gazza, that also players like Vinnie Samways, who came on, and Naeem, and Paul Allen, just all upped it.
Yeah.
They all looked at each other and said, right, well, we ain't got Gazza here, so we're all going to have to up our game. And they all did. I mean, you know, the first half, things all went Forest way, and the second half from then on, you know, they sort of all upped it. So for us, I mean, it's fantastic. Couple of things. I remember being at that game, and when the goal went in, they actually said it was Gary Mabbott that had scored it. So we all sort of said, oh, fantastic. You know, the stadium announcer said, oh, fantastic. Gary Mabbott after the 87, you know, it's like, you know, good for him. And then, of course, we didn't have internet and all that in those days. So I didn't actually know you'd scored it till we got home. And when it was you, I saw most Spurs fans thinking, oh, no, not Des Walker. We like Des Walker. Couldn't it have been one of the ones that we don't like? So, you know, that was a shame. And to know that you're a Spurs fan as well, it's like, oh, you know, that's not on. And but you know, it's one of these things that I'm sure that Spurs fans, whenever they meet you, they sort of say, oh, thanks very much. Just like Gary Mabbott when he goes to Coventry, he's like regarded as a legend back there. But that's enough of that about that. I promise.
People always mention it. They say, oh, I think you're a great player. They say that, but thanks for the cup final. You know, there's always that smirk on their face, and you think, oh, I didn't mean it, mate. Honestly, I wasn't trying to make you happy.
I know. we got a guy called Dean Flintoft who says, send him my regards, he's an old schoolmate.
He went to Ambrose Fleming. I went to Ambrose Fleming in Enfield, and Dean, he's a football Tottenham nut. Nah, he's been at since since I was 11, and he's been a Tottenham fan ever since. A diehard Tottenham fan. So, Dean, good evening, hello, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, no, he's good. He sent some questions in as well. I'm not going to get all through all these questions, though. People who have sent them in, thanks ever so much. But I'm not going to get through all of them, unfortunately. I'll just ask you, let's see if we've got a good one here. We've got, you know, they're all asking about your Sampdoria days and 91, all the Cluffy stuff and Gazza, of course. I mean, you know, with England, just have a final thought here. Actually, as a Spurs fan, what are your thoughts on next season?
I think it'll be interesting. I think the league's is open now more than it's been for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
I think there's five or six, it's always four or five, six teams. But I think with Manchester United going off the boil and in terms of what they did, they tend to, because of Alex Ferguson's dominance and their spirit, if any of the other teams didn't step up and dominate the league that year, Man United would always win it. They were always going to win. Whereas now, I don't think that's second nature. So it leaves it open every year for five, six, seven teams. That team can be Tottenham if they do well. That team can be an Everton if they do well. Whereas before, if Chelsea or Man City didn't do well, that's it. It's going to be Man United. Will be the yardstick. They have to get, say, like 90 points to beat Manchester United. They're going to get that anyhow.
Yeah.
So you had to be an exceptional season then for the next four or five teams. And you see that with Liverpool last year. They're in the hunt come February. You know, and sometimes on an average season, Man United won it by then.
Yeah.
So I think, as I say, it'd be good for the league. It'd be good for the league. And the likes of, say, there's only six teams really that can win it, I'd say, nowadays. Just because of the squad structure and how much money it takes to build a squad.
Yeah.
You know? So only 16 squad is anywhere near good enough. But, Tottenham, the thing is, they're guilty of wasting money at times.
Oh, absolutely,
they've spent it. sometimes it's spent enough to compete, you know, up there, especially in top four easily enough. But they've waited, sometimes they've wasted the money, and as I say, you need that continuity. You can't keep chopping and changing managers.
And
expect success, you know, because each manager comes in, he spends his 80 million and then goes. Another one comes in, he doesn't want that, he spends his 60 million and then goes. Yeah. All of a sudden, that's how money gets wasted, and these players can't be sold back again for nowhere near the same money because the next manager's coming and he ain't used some of them.
I know.
So it's a shame the way it's run, the way it is, but it's the pressure and demands of modern day football now. The managers don't get along, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, that's the thing, and you know, it's chopping and changing all the time, and you know, with Roy Hodgson with England, some people are saying, you know, nice fella, let him have another couple of years, see if we can go again. Some people are saying, listen, you know, he's not good enough, you know, get someone else in. But then you look around and you go, well, where are all the people? You know, I think, you know, someone like Stuart Pearce, you know, he's nailed on to the England manager, you know, when he was playing, because what an inspirational figure. And also your fellow England man, you played it alongside Terry Butcher. I mentioned that to Russell Osman a couple of weeks ago, who I had on the show, who played with him in Ipswich. You know, this guy, he was a powerhouse for England. Surely, you know, Butcher and Pearce on that England touchline. But managers seem to come and go so quickly. You're trying to cling on to someone, and there's only about two or three who are successful. So,
the thing is, it's what some of our biggest problems in not just football, but in the country, is our powerful, our pressure. And they're very, very powerful, and sometimes, you know, it doesn't matter how good, bad, or strong, or whatever you are, if they don't take to you, you're out.
Yeah.
Because they will make that movement against you within a blink of an eyelid. And within 2 weeks, you'll be out. And I sense from the very start of last season that the Manchester United manager wouldn't last to the end of the season.
Yeah.
Because the press weren't going to let him last. And as soon as Manchester United give him 6 years, I thought, well, they'll flex their muscles and say, well, I bet you he don't last 6 years. They think he's got security. And Roy Hodgson may well, if the guy can come out and back him all he wants for the next 2 years, if the press think after one game, they want rid of him. But make no mistake about it, he's on his way out before November.
Yeah.
If they decide. Because it's just that movement now that press has got that influence on 15 million people in the country, and once you've got 15 million people going on your siding with you, then you're, as a manager, you're dead. So people like Pearson, people like Butch are very inspirational people to play with. The players and the press can't do anything, but if they haven't got that character to manipulate the press, then that's the biggest trick. That's the trick that I think that Terry Venables has. That's the trick that Jose Mourinho's got.
Yeah.
That's the trick. It doesn't really come down to management at times. It comes down to how well you can deal with the press and how well you can humour them, how well you can play the game with them and give them what they want.
And of course, Cluffy was the best,
time,
right?
That gives you time. That Cluffy was the best. Yeah, that gives you time to then build your team.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, so, you know, it's all football, isn't it? It's changing all the time, and, you know, we hark back to the good old days, and yeah, we look forward and what have you. But listen, you know, it's been fantastic having you on. I've just been sent a text message by me mate Matt. He said, how's it going? My mate Farnsworth, his children go to the same school as your kids do, apparently, and he said there's a problem with the parking, but I'm not going to mention that on this podcast that's all about Tottenham, so... thanks ever so much for being on the show.
Thank you very much for the pleasure.
And you know, it's been great talking about all the old times. And you know, we'd love to have you on again. And certainly if I have a bump into you on the golf course or wherever, I'll say hello. And you know, all the best.
All right, thanks a lot, Steve. It's been a pleasure. Right. Thank you very much indeed.
That's brilliant. Thanks a lot, Des. Cheers.
All right. Bye now. Care, mate. Bye. 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 Bye.